The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
We're taking a closer look at the economy of Indonesia and specifically investments from China to start off with. That is a key issue for the Indonesian general election set for April 17th. Helping us out is Joshua Chambers. He is founder of the Singapore-based media startup GovInsider. According to the Jakarta Post, over the past few years, Indonesia has seen an increasing number of Chinese investments. In 2017, China was ranked as the country with the third largest foreign investment in Indonesia at $3.36 billion, a significant increase from $2.66 billion in 2016. Joshua, President Joko Widodo has been very open to Chinese investment, but his opponent, Gerindra leader Prabowo Subianto, is against it. Do we know where the Indonesian people stand on the issue?
Well, of course, in Indonesia, it's very difficult to say where the entire Indonesian people stand because you have such regional diversity. So, for example, if you're in the Natuna Islands, which was counted in China's nine-dash line and counted as part of Chinese territory, then you're going to be firmly against this. Whereas if you're in West Papua, you're more concerned about just getting basic infrastructure. But more broadly than that, this is becoming an issue in the election. And I don't think it's so much about the money or the investment itself. It plays into those older historical issues that have long plagued Indonesian politics. And in some ways, it's a replay of the issues that we saw in the Jakarta general election when, of course, the Chinese governor Ahok was facing quite strong and aggressive campaigns from the opposition. What we're also seeing in this election is we're seeing the vice presidential candidate being the person who was the vice gubernatorial candidate in that Jakarta election. So it's very much a replay of those sorts of issues rather than a debate in detail about the money itself.
Mm-hmm. Do you see President Joko's relationship with China kind of turning toxic for this campaign as the election draws nearer?
Well, the thing with the president's relationship with China is when you compare it to somewhere like the Philippines, it's actually much less close. You know, for example, his minister has been blowing up Chinese fishing vessels with grenades, and something that's been very upsetting to the Chinese. Whereas if you look at Duterte in the Philippines, they said that the Spratly Islands were potentially a part of China, and in return, they've still not received the investment they wanted. So it's not, again, about that exact relationship. It's more around the perceptions of closeness or the perceptions of being soft on certain issues.
And do we know how the country Indonesia has responded to China's Belt and Road Initiative? The Jakarta Post recently saying the country is a reluctant participant.
I disagree with that. I mean, I think every country would say that it's a reluctant participant because no nation actually wants to admit that it's getting infrastructure financing from somewhere else. There's a pride in financing your own infrastructure. You know, could you imagine in Singapore, for example, that there were headlines that it's the Chinese that are building the highways or building the MRT? That's just not going to be popular. So while they could say they're a reluctant participant, they are a participant. I mean, a flagship infrastructure scheme is the Jakarta to Bandung high-speed rail, which was won by the Chinese because it was much cheaper than the Japanese alternative. And I think as long as, you know, Chinese companies are proving competitive in that way, you're going to see vast amounts of Chinese investment in Indonesia. I did recently interview the Minister of National Development Planning and asked him about this topic, and he was saying, look, it's different to somewhere like Sri Lanka. Now, Sri Lanka, of course, has given up a large amount of debt, a large amount of equity in return for Chinese investments. They weren't able to pay that debt back, and so they lost control of their port quite recently to the Chinese government. You aren't seeing Indonesia give up these nationally strategic important bits of infrastructure. It's more like things like high-speed railway, which, while important, is less of an emotive or toxic issue in global politics.
I'm really glad you brought up that example of Sri Lanka. Are there any fears that the same sort of thing could happen in Indonesia? That, I mean, Indonesia has a history of being indebted. It used to be to the World Bank, IMF, yeah. Right? Now, could there be a danger that becomes indebted to China, and China makes that same play, taking over something strategic in Indonesia?
Well, when I asked the minister about this, he was very bullish, as perhaps you'd imagine, but he was saying no. That is not going to happen. There's no chance of it. And while the Indonesian economy over the past few months especially has been pretty fragile, we've seen the rupiah really fluctuating quite heavily. So far, there's no indication whatsoever that that's likely to happen. The Indonesian government says that it's watching very closely on where this infrastructure is being invested in. And you don't have anywhere near remotely like the same situation as Sri Lanka, which is a heavily indebted nation, building these infrastructure projects with no chance of a return. You know, this entire Chinese city on the south coast, or the port that they've built that doesn't seem to be economically viable anyway. There, they were more dubious political decisions that didn't seem to be about the direct impact on the economy, whereas Jokowi's been very clear that infrastructure investment is vital to getting to that 7% GDP growth. And without that infrastructure, you're just not going to see that growth anyway.
Mm-hmm. And what other sticking points, Joshua, do you think will be brought to the fore in the lead up to the 2019 Indonesian election?
Well, I think there's probably two. First has to be inequality. You can have 5% growth, as you've seen at the moment. You can have 7% growth. You can have 200% growth. But if you've still got over 20 million people living on less than $2 a day, if you've got 10% of your population living in absolute poverty, then that's going to be a huge issue in the election and one that needs to be tackled. Inequality is an issue that certainly the opposition is playing up very, very strongly. You know, there's real sensitivity and sentiment around this, that while some people are benefiting, the elite is benefiting, and in some ways it's those old tensions that it's the Chinese benefiting, not other people in Indonesia. Unless you have that fundamental change, unless you start to see those ordinary people benefiting in the proceeds of growth, that's going to be the number one issue.
Joshua Chambers is founder of Singapore-based media startup GovInsider, taking a closer look at the economy of Indonesia. Now, Thailand will be holding its general election next year, February 24th, and the country has taken a very welcoming stance on Chinese investment, particularly in its Eastern Economic Corridor. Mm. Before we head back to Indonesia, could you share a little about Thailand and Chinese investment and how strong the opposition within Thailand has been?
Well, you know, I went to a summit by Huawei, which has been quite in the press recently anyhow, in May, and their guest of honour was the Deputy Prime Minister of Thailand. And he got up on stage and said, please, Huawei, come to Thailand, and more Chinese companies, please come, please invest in Thailand. We want to be more like China. We can learn a lot from how rapidly your economy has grown. They have this vision, Thailand 4.0, which sees new startups, new entrepreneurs, particularly in the healthcare sector, in the GovTech sector, and in manufacturing, of course, that Eastern Economic Corridor as well. So they're really, really open to Chinese investment. Now, on the opposition side, the opposition is very fragmented in Thailand, and the issues that are being opposed are not really related to foreign investment at all. So in terms of the election, I don't think this is going to come up whatsoever. I don't even think the Huawei issue is going to come up at all. There's going to be more bread and butter issues, like the fact there's a military government currently there, and there was previously a popular elected government, and that's going to be the central fault line of that election.
Okay. Well, let's move back to Indonesia right now. It was reported in October that the World Bank will offer the quake-stricken country up to $1 billion in funding to boost disasters, preparedness and recovery. Well, the money will go towards helping the country shore up its resilience, as well as to support relief and reconstruction efforts in Lombok and also central Sulawesi, following a recent series of deadly disasters that left thousands dead and scores more displaced. How far will this amount go in helping Indonesia's relief efforts?
Well, the first thing is that it doesn't seem that the Indonesian government has actually accepted this funding. It's been offered, but they haven't yet accepted it. And second, those two disasters in Lombok and Palu weren't recognized federally as national disasters. So they feel that they have the capacity within the nation at the moment to fund relief efforts and to tackle them. I think actually, I'm quite passionate about disaster recovery in Indonesia, and I think what's more important is not that national level, but what's happening at the local level. And it's two things. It's where the governments are prepared, and it's where the people are prepared as well. And you can learn a lot from Asian neighbours on this. But if you look at what happened in Palu, for example, they had a disaster recovery system, but people had stolen the batteries from the boys. They'd stolen key parts. And the government also didn't, the local government, didn't seem to have any sort of evacuation plan or any sort of response. So while they know that they're living in an area that natural disasters are relatively common, this is seen as less of a bread and butter political issue than some of the things that we've just discussed, or of course, transportation gridlock, or housing, or police, or crime, or healthcare. And unless you start to get more of that debate in Indonesia about whether political candidates have a disaster recovery plan, whether they're going to take it seriously, then you're still going to see these issues start to arise. It's not really about $1 billion, $10 billion, $100 million. It's about changing the culture in Indonesia.
When it comes to disaster management infrastructure, are there models in Asia that Indonesia can learn from?
Definitely. I think there's two. One is the Philippines and one is Japan. So in the Philippines, they've been very good at raising awareness culturally of the importance of building plans. So Manny Pacquiao is an ambassador for this movement to make sure that there's pressure on local governments to be putting in place plans for disaster recovery and evacuation plans. The second is in Japan. So Japan, particularly the city of Kawasaki, it's worked with the company Fujitsu to do quite advanced modelling with artificial intelligence to predict, is there likely to be a disaster? Where's the tsunami likely to hit? And therefore, what do we need to do to our citizens? When we alert them, where do they go? When Aceh faced the tsunami, one of the big problems was that ordinary people actually went to the beach. The sea went out before it rushed back in, and people were picking up the fish, and they didn't realize that this was, you know, a sign of a tsunami coming. So Japan has been very good in educating its citizens and saying, you need to be aware of these issues, and you need to evacuate in these certain places. And then every year, the schools all run drills, and they make sure that citizens are resilient and ready so that the problems of history don't repeat themselves.
So we'll be talking to Joshua Chambers, founder of a Singapore-based media startup, Guff Insider, right here on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.